Hello, hackers. My name is Dominic Norton, and I am the podcast host of Hackathon Entertainment, the show where we bring you the story behind every hack. For those new to the show, or hackathons in general, a hackathon is a collaborative 48-hour event where participants, called hackers, come together to solve the world's toughest problems. You'll be surprised, excited, and amazed with the solutions people are developing all across the world. If you listened to the show before, you'll be excited to know we're in for another great one. In this episode, I catch up with Jonathan Gottfried, the co-founder of Major League Hacking and former developer evangelist at Twilio. Jonathan shares his wide-ranging insights with us about hackathons and the story of Major League Hacking. This episode was one for the books. I hope you enjoy the show.
I'm John Gottfried. I'm one of the co-founders of Major League Hacking. We've been doing this for about 7 years. Before that, I worked as a developer evangelist at Twilio. And then before that, I actually was a history student. So that's the weird start of the story. You know, I had always been what I would consider a hacker. You know, to me, that's tinkering with technology, making interesting new stuff. You know, it's not the security implications so much. But I'd always been doing that as a kid. And when I went to college, I tried studying computer science. And I realized pretty quickly that it wasn't for me. It was a little bit too academic, you know, not focused enough on building things. And I switched to history because I really wanted to like work with people and teach people and do all of that. And what actually dragged me back into tech was hackathons and hacker culture. So this is like the weird part of the story where I got mono one semester and I ended up taking a semester off from school. And I felt better pretty quickly, but I missed, you know, like a month of class. And I was at home in like my small town in New York, you know, at my parents' house, bored out of my mind because my, you know, friends were all away at school. And I started applying for developer jobs on Craigslist so that I would have something to like kill time. And I ended up getting this job that was across the street from my parents' house and edtech startup in like a random small town in New York. And through that, a bunch of my coworkers dragged me along to my first hackathon. And it totally changed my perspective on like everything about the tech world. It was this really cool event called Music Hack Day, where it was like musicians and designers and programmers and like hackers and everything just building crazy music tech mashups. And I left that event and I was like, this is awesome. I want to do this every weekend. And so I started going all the time and, and I participated in a ton of events all over, you know, New York. And that got me hooked and led to me, you know, getting a job at Twilio after I graduated from college. So it was like very much like love at first sight.
Yeah, I think everybody at all of your events has a similar story of, you know, a friend dragged me along and I wasn't too sure what this thing was and I went and it just made sense.
Yes, I will be totally honest that the first time I heard what a hackathon was, I was like, that sounds like a terrible way to spend a weekend. and then I went and I was like, this is amazing. Like, I want to do this every weekend, you know? And I think that a lot of people have a similar experience.
And so where did Major League Hacking come in? What part of the process was that?
Yeah, so, you know, for me, I had gotten introduced to hackathons a little like towards the end of college. Swift, my co-founder, went to his first hackathon while he was a student. And we had gotten to know each other because we were both developer evangelists. So I worked at Twilio. He worked at SendGrid. We both lived in New York. And we basically ended up like getting involved with a lot of the same community events. And for me, a lot of those events were student hackathons. And so, you know, as we were talking about like our future and working together and all of that, you know, Swift had recently quit his job at SendGrid. He was trying to like drag me along to work on something with him. And he, you know, was friends with a lot of the people who ran student hackathons at the time. Yeah. And he basically started, you know, at the suggestion of a friend, kind of like creating some structure and rankings around all the student hackathons that existed. And that was the beginning of MLH. And, you know, as I was ready to move on from Twilio, I kind of joined him and we helped scale it up. But it was very much just born out of like a passion for the community, wishing that there was more of this when we were in school, and, you know, having relationships with people who are also really excited and passionate about it. And, you know, getting to a point where, you know, we felt like there was a lot of potential there to spread to more people, right? And it grew organically from there.
What I find particularly interesting about your story is that it was very organic. As some of the hackathons that I've experienced, people go into it trying to build some billion-dollar company or trying to build co-founders. And what I'm finding more and more from the success stories is that it's very, very organic. Is that, do you find a similar pattern in your story to a lot of different stories you see in the how organic it is? Even when you look at some of the biggest companies in the world, especially in the tech space, a lot of them didn't set out to build billion-dollar companies.
I do think that the value that comes out of hackathons is organic. And I would kind of expand on what you said a little bit. Like, I don't think hackathons are a good place to build a billion-dollar business. I do think they are a good place to, like, make the connections and the personal relationships that last a very long time, right? Mm-hmm. Towards whatever means that is. You know, there are people I've met at hackathons who are close personal friends who I've never worked with. There are people that, you know, I met and led to a job opportunity. I think that, you know, they are a really like strong bonding experience from a personal perspective. And that is the value that comes out of it. And I think the learning and the technology is almost like secondary to that. You know, like whether or not your project works or is successful or wins a prize or becomes a product and a startup is kind of like irrelevant to the whole experience. You know, like I think the best experiences I've had are bizarre and are kind of failures in terms of where the project turns out, but were a lot of fun, right? And were interesting and challenging and, you know, like cool, right? Like it was just like an interesting way to spend a weekend. And that was it, you know, like we didn't have greater ambitions. And frankly, I think for MLH, like we did have grand ambitions to bring hacker culture to as many people as possible. But in the early days, it was very much like, let's support this community that has given us a lot that we want to give back to. And the growth came organically. Like we didn't set out to be like, we want every school to have a hackathon, you know? I think that a lot of that comes later as you figure out what people actually need.
I'm starting to see the same kind of pattern in what you're experiencing. And I think it's an interesting, alternative might not be the best way, but we have built our social system. When people are going on LinkedIn, it's almost forced connections. I want to connect with you for this job or to sell you something. And I like the fact that at hackathons, you go knowing you're going to build relationships, but you don't know what to expect. And that's at every single hackathon. You know you're going to build a relationship with somebody. It can be, you don't know what country, you don't know what demographic, you don't know how you're going to link together. Like, I played basketball. It might be someone who we had the same basketball coach and we've never met before.
And you're working towards a shared goal that is, like, it's a shared goal that's very, like, finite. You know, it's not like we want to build a billion-dollar company. It's like, we want to get this, like, random idea working in a short period of time and then we're done and we can figure out what's next.
Yeah. And maybe that's the key to building relationships.
I think you're right. It's kind of hard to describe. I think that like part of it is that everyone's definition of success is a little bit different. And I actually think that's a really like powerful thing. Like when you're at a, you know, when you have a job, right? Like someone else is kind of defining what success looks like a lot of the time. When you're in school, you know, success is grades or getting a job. When you're at a hackathon, like one person might be like, I want to write my first web app ever. And someone else might be like, I want to build like a working self-driving car. And, you know, those are vastly different scopes of work. But if both of them come out the other end feeling successful, like think about how awesome that is, that those two goals can coexist in the same event, right? And I think that's kind of the magic of it, is that you have the only shared goal is to like do something that you yourself are pleased with. Yeah. Right? It's like a marathon, you know? Yeah. Like, most people are not competing to win a marathon, you know? Like, there's a very small fraction of people that can even consider that. Most people just want to finish, yeah. And I think hackathons are the same way.
Yeah. I definitely agree. That's the same thing I've experienced as a participant, but now as a kind of journalist, it's the stories that I'm starting to see from people that it's their first hackathon and they just wanted to make it through the 2 days. A little bit later on, we talk about a definition, but hackathons is a very broad term. How have you seen it impact students?
Yeah, and I think that's a good point that you bring up, that like hackathons are not specifically only for programmers. Yeah. Like I've seen similar events for like songwriters or yeah. chefs or musicians. Like I think there's a lot of interesting twists on the format of like come up with something new in a short period of time.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really important point.
Yeah.
But in terms of impact, there's two ways to look at it, right? Like one is like the numbers, you know, the quantitative impact, which I think is really compelling. You know, last year we saw about 100,000 students come through our events, which is like a ton. Like that's so many more people than I would have imagined, you know, a couple of years ago. And a lot of those people, you know, learned very concrete skills. Like we do a ton of surveying after our events, and something like 85% of students say they learn things at hackathons that they don't learn in class, right? So that's like a really compelling thing from a stats perspective. But for me, it's always been more about the stories like you're talking about. Like I think that there are so many people who have like life-changing experiences from these events, and yeah. that's like such a compelling thing. You know, you mentioned some of it, but like there's things where people, you know, meet their best friends, you know, that's a lifelong like relationship. They meet their future co-founders. They, you know, are creating something that goes viral and that changes the course of their career. They gain the like base level of confidence that allows yeah. them to continue in tech. You know, I think that like it's different for different people, but so many folks have had life-changing experiences because of these events, and ultimately because they proved to themselves that they were capable of something that they didn't think they were capable of before.
Yeah.
And that's the impact, right? Like if there was nothing else, like no, you know, numbers or money or like jobs or anything else that came out of it, like if people came out of it feeling more confident and having learned something interesting that they didn't think they could do before, like that's a win.
Do you feel, and now I'm seeing more corporates holding hackathons, sorry, and startups holding hackathons, and I over here in the UK, and I know in India and Saudi Arabia, governments are actually holding hackathons now to try and facilitate ideas. Do you feel the structure of the hackathon is scalable in these different arenas?
I think it's a hard balance to strike. I have seen many corporate or government-run hackathons that turned out really well. I've also seen a lot that were not great. For me, the big like defining factor that can make it successful is how open-ended it is. You know, I think that companies who come in and say, okay, we want to get a bunch of developers in a room for a weekend to solve this problem our company has, right? That can almost come off like spec work. You know, like you're just paying the person who does the best solution and everyone else is screwed, you know? I don't think that's good for the community or for the company. I think that companies that come in and say, okay, we want to build awareness around something, or we want to inspire people around a new technology. You know, that can work really well because it allows people to be creative. And the same thing is true of governments. You know, if a government wants someone to build a new website for like a procurement system, they should just hire some developers to do that. You know, like they know exactly what they need. If they want to bring people together and be like, hey, here's this data set. We're curious what you come up with, right? Like, what are you thinking about? What have you created? I think that's amazing, right? Like, I think it is a different level of civic engagement than you typically see. And it's open-ended enough that people can get creative with it. And that is, you know, the big difference there, right? Like, if it's really specific and almost like spec worky versus like open-ended and creative, and you're just enabling that to happen.
I think you made some great points that I've been trying to resolve in my head, especially when it comes to corporate hackathons, because I have seen a lot of corporate hackathons that wouldn't attract me, but I guess within the corporate space is different from their everyday work. And I think you made a great point that they don't know when you're holding your student hackathons, it's open-ended enough where you're like, come up, we don't know what we want, come up with this solution to solve food scarcity or water shortages, or you can just come up with a random thing that we haven't even thought about. I think in the corporate space, in the government space, sometimes in the startup space, they know what they want. They just kind of want you to build it in a slightly creative way. And
And I think that I've rarely seen that work, you know, like if you already know what you want, just like hire someone to build it, you'll be better off and they'll be better off.
Yeah. You also made a very good point that I didn't think of too much until literally a day ago. So I speak to a lot of people holding hackathons and editathons and makeathons. Recently, I started to speak to business schools about business case competitions, because I'm thinking about, you know, the scope of innovation challenges is much bigger. But then you have, I was an architecture and construction student. So we had design charrettes, which are the same thing. And then you have, I think in, when it comes to films, you have writers that come together and they collectively write. And I do think there's something there when it comes to bringing people together to produce creative ideas. And I just love that you, I think out of everywhere in the world, and I haven't been everywhere and I don't know every company, but the community you build is closest to the model that we all love as participants. How do you, how did you build that community? Was it intentional? Well, did the community grow organically? Did you just set the seed and it kind of watered and grew itself?
A little of both. I think that hackathons have a natural spread built in, especially for students. Like most often what happens, and this is, you know, pre-COVID, right? Like where people were traveling a lot. You know, most often what would happen is people would get together and go to a hackathon at another school, and they'd be like, this is awesome. We want to do one at our school too. And they would go home and we would help them figure that out, right? Like we are a resource for them, you know, at the end of the day. I think that there's a couple of things that have allowed it to remain like authentic though. Some of it is that like a lot of people on our team came out of this community and like remember what that is like, you know, to be attending and organizing hackathons, and they think about that very concretely. The other part of that is that we are not like a mega company organizing hundreds of hackathons. We're working with student groups who are organizing their own events, you know, like almost like chapters of the organization, so that every event, every school has like a little bit of a different twist. And I don't think that a centralized model would come up with that many different creative ideas. You know, I think that like the fact that people are designing it for themselves and for their campus with our support makes them much more interesting and like creates a lot more variety. But, you know, I think the last thing is the intentional part, which is like, we have tried really hard to codify the values that make MLH special. And I know that, like, you know, I'm kind of a cynic, right? So when I think of corporate values, I'm like, you know, like a bunch of people in a boardroom wrote down some like aspirational ideas. But, you know, for us, I feel like they were very authentic to how we already thought about things, and we kind of just wrote them down on paper, and they are actively part of how we make decisions on a day-to-day basis. And I think that makes a huge difference, right? Like, our first value is hackers first, you know, and I constantly hear people at MLH having discussions where they're like, okay, like, does this decision put hackers first, or is this like, you know, serving a different constituency? Like, how do we consider that? How do we balance that? And, you know, it's become part of the fabric of how we do things every day.
I think that's awesome. You serve a role of facilitation, like many of the organizers of your events. The organizers of your events don't tell people how to build. They don't tell people what to build, but they facilitate. They provide them the venue. They provide them food. They provide them mentors if needed. Really, it's resources as requested and a loose framework, but you don't tell anybody anything. And I think that is the key difference.
What I would add to that, though, is that, like, the things that we do require, I think, are actually important. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we require that all of our events are free for students to attend, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that we try really hard not to impact any, like, creative twists on the format while still maintaining some level of, like, consistency from event to event. Yeah. Like, every event has to follow the MLH code of conduct. That's mm-hmm. important. Whether the event is space themed or food themed, you know, that's awesome. Like, they can both coexist and mm-hmm. they don't conflict, you know?
Yeah. And maybe that's what makes you different to, so some companies out there or some communities out there might contract an events company to do it. But an events company is different to a company that run hackathons that help events, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're a community organization,
yeah,
not an events company, right? Yeah. Like, I definitely, you know, when I describe MLH to people, I say that we're the global student developer community, not, like, the global hackathon events company, right? Like, yeah. I think there's a really important difference there. You know, we want to serve hackers regardless of what they're doing or how they're doing it. And hackathons are part of that. But we also have workshops and conferences, yeah, and demo days and, like, all sorts of different things that help people build their skills and network and confidence, you know?
Yeah. And we're going to come to the recent conference, and we're going to talk about demo days. I wanted to get some of your thoughts on the rise of these virtual hackathons. I wouldn't have even considered entering a virtual hackathon before, but since the lockdown, at least here in London and all over the world, I participated in few. It's a very different experience. I guess I'm traditional. I have a preference to in person. But how have you seen the differences in the way people innovate, the way it's organized, basically the whole attitudes towards virtual hackathons?
It's interesting. I mean, I kind of agree with you on a personal level that there are, like, I probably would not have considered participating in virtual hackathons before all this went down.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I think there are aspects of an in-person hackathon that are difficult or impossible to recreate online.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I think that this has kind of provided an opportunity for people to, like, take a step back and look at hackathons a little bit more, like, philosophically. Because I think everyone has, like, fallen into this pattern of, like, this is what a hackathon looks and feels like, and here's the resources we need, and here's the way sponsors interact, and here's the way we do swag, and, like, whatever, right? Like, there's kind of a template. which is fine. It works well. People love it. I think that virtual hackathons are allowing for a little bit more, like, creativity with the, like, core format. Like, to give you one example, for us, you know, our team has been running a bunch of virtual hackathons to learn more about what virtual hackathons are like and what goes into it. I would say one of the more interesting things for me is that we've had to adapt our events for a global audience. Before, MLH had events in India and in Nigeria and in the UK and in the US, right?
Yeah.
Those were all distinct events. You know, they didn't really cross over at all.
Yeah.
In virtual hackathons, you could have all of those different places and many more collaborating together. And so we've actually had to adapt the format to accommodate that, right? Like, mm-hmm. what happens, like, what do you do when your opening ceremony is in the middle of the night for one person and the beginning of the day for someone else? You know, how do you deal with that? What do you do when you have, like, workshops or judging or any of those things that are, like, time-bound aspects of the hackathon?
Yeah.
And we've had to think about that quite a bit more. And I think that is super interesting and presents a lot of cool possibilities.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm excited to see what people do with that. We're starting to go into the fall semester, and a lot of student groups are beginning to plan their virtual hackathons. And even, like, things that we used to take for granted, like differentiation, you know, mm-hmm. it used to be easy because you were differentiated based on where you took place.
Yeah.
Now people have to think about it more. And I think we're going to see a lot of cool stuff coming out of that.
So let's talk demo days and let's talk conferences. You recently had a conference, right?
Yeah, we recently had HackCon, which is our annual organizers conference. Normally, it takes place at a beautiful summer camp in Pennsylvania. This year, it was fully virtual, which was awesome because, as I mentioned, we had much more global participation. So, yeah, I mean, it was really exciting. But it's a place for organizers to come together and talk about how to best build their communities.
Yeah. And what are the most exciting ways that you've seen organizers build communities, or some ways that really stand out and you're like, oh, that's a little bit different?
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with, like, the repeated rituals that your community has. Like, imagine if you're a student club, you know, you used to meet up every week and, like, do your homework in person or get dinner or, like, whatever. What do you do now? You know, like, some clubs are getting really creative. They have, like, weekly game nights where they play video games together, or they, like, do a trivia on Zoom, or they pair program remotely. You know, I think there's a lot of interesting ways to approach that. But honestly, we're still at the beginning. Like, it's, I think we're going to see a lot of the more innovative solutions coming up in the next couple of months, mm-hmm. As everyone starts, like, resuming, you know, campus life. And it's different in every country, right? Like, some schools, everyone's back in person. Some are totally remote. Some are hybrid. And I think adapting to that is going to be, I don't really know how it's going to pan out yet, mm-hmm. to be totally honest.
And is there a recent series that's been going on with the demo days?
So, yes and no. One of the things that we've done differently this year versus in the past is we've been live streaming hackathon demos on Twitch every week.
Yeah.
That's been really fun. We get a lot of people, like, watching and commenting. And I think it's also really cool just to, like, get on camera and show off something you built to a wider audience. So I've been really excited about that. In addition to that, we do an event called Local Hack Day every year. Now it's actually three times a year. So there's Learn, Build, and Share. Learn is like a technical skills building day. It's coming up in October. Build is more of like a 12-hour hackathon, and that's in January. And then Share, I think, is in the spring. I don't know the specific month yet. And that's almost like a huge finish up a thon and demo day where you can finish projects you've been working on all year and show them off. So I love seeing those demos on Twitch, honestly.
Yeah, I love seeing the demos. I love the rawness of when demos don't work and you have to explain it, or the slides and what you're trying to show doesn't sync up with what you're saying.
Yep. It's definitely a fun technical challenge.
For those that don't know that experience or slightly scared of that experience, how do you get over that hurdle of...
I think a lot of it is just like the culture that you create. Like in the example of demos, you know, how is the host, right? Like the MLHer or the organizer talking about the projects, you know, are they talking about it like it's like a cutthroat competition, or are they talking about how amazing and impressed they are and ideas for the future? You know, I think it's up to like leaders in the community to set that kind of culture and expectations in a positive way, because like, sure. Like, honestly, every hackathon I've ever done, I've gotten to the end and I've been like, wow, there's 1,000 things I could have done better here. You know, and I know that, and every hacker knows that when they get to the end. It's not a surprise, you know, and so that's not really what you need to hear. Yeah. You know, oftentimes what you need to hear is like, A, encouragement, or B, constructive criticism that you wouldn't have thought of on your own.
Yeah.
Like, okay, like, hey, like, you built this in whatever, like Sinatra. Have you ever heard of Rails? You know, like helping people learn new skills and learn what they don't know yet can be constructive without necessarily like diminishing what they've created.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I'm finding when I'm speaking to beginners, one of the most difficult parts is actually talking about their work and what they've done and their process confidently. And we understand, you know, I think we've got to a point where we know we've wrote code and there's a whole bunch of bugs in there and it's half broken, but it kind of works every now and again. Just hopefully when I show you this time, it works. But we understand this is the life we live in. When you come to bring in multidisciplinary people in the room, maybe the marketers don't experience that every day, or the lawyers don't experience that every day. Different industries experience different things, especially when it comes to building. So that's,
I completely agree.
Yeah. And we're nearly finished. So I want to go more onto advice for students. And let's say we haven't really spoke about mentoring and judging, which I do want to get your insights about mentoring and judging. But advice for students that maybe they haven't heard of hackathons, or maybe they've heard about it from a friend, they're not quite sure. What advice would you have for students about attending hackathons and participating in hackathons?
I think my main piece of advice is take advantage of the situation we're in, where you literally don't even need to get off your butt on the couch to attend a hackathon. Like, it's so easy, you know? And it can be just as fun and just as, like, inspiring. Like, go to a virtual hackathon. There's really no excuse not to, you know? Mm-hmm. I think it's very accessible and more than it ever has been. And mm-hmm. I think that many of the things that can be intimidating about big in-person events are much less so when you're virtual. And all of the events that we're working with at MLH, you know, have put a lot of thought and intentionality into making them welcoming and bringing new people into the community. And I think I would encourage everyone to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
The other piece of advice I would give that's maybe a little bit more tactical is when you're building your hackathon project, think about what the like exciting part of it is and work backwards from there. A lot of time people invest a lot of their, you know, hours over the weekend building things that are not necessary to prove out their core concept. So what I mean, to be more specific, is like, okay, you want to build an app maybe to help people get access to, I don't know, like food deliveries, right? Maybe the important part of that you need to show off is, I've created a really cool interface to search through different types of cuisines. You know, like maybe that's the really compelling part. The person you're demoing it to probably doesn't care about how the login system works. You know, like every app has a login system. 99% of them are exactly the same. The cool part of your app is how you show and search through different types of food, you know? Mm-hmm. So you want to think about your projects in that perspective of like, what is novel about what I'm creating and what can be added later if we want to take this further, but isn't really relevant to the demo.
Developers, developers, developers. Developers, developers, developers. Developers, developers, developers. Developers, developers, developers.